You're listening to Robert Martinez, the apartment rock star. Robert is a national award-winning real estate brand influencer and entrepreneur whose company, Rockstar Capital Management, was recognized as the 15th fastest growing company in Houston by the Houston Business Journal. In addition to his 11 100% refinance cash out events, his company has earned 15 city, state, and national apartment association awards.
Hi, I'm Robert Martinez, and welcome to another episode of the Apartment Rockstar Podcast. Well, you know, in the past several weeks, we've gone and we've talked to our staff, we've had business leaders, we just recently highlighted our breast cancer walk, but this is going to be a good one, because this is the origin story of Rockstar Capital. We haven't shown this yet on film. You're going to get to meet the person today who was there, who experienced it. We had a Jerry Maguire moment together at one time, right? So we have Melissa Alvarado, who is today our chief of operations of 3,840 units worth $348 million. And this young lady is 29 years old. Why is she sitting
almost
here?
30.
She's 29, not 30. We're 29, but she's aging gracefully. But why is she sitting in this chair? She's the heart and soul rock star. Hey, Melissa, welcome to the podcast. Have you not been on the podcast yet?
I have not. I've been thrown to the end.
No, what's happened is because you're running the damn company.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so Melissa, everybody wants to know. So,
finally here.
So how did Rockstar come about? Like, tell us a little more. Let's start with your origin story and how Rockstar came into that.
So the way that I started from working at a restaurant. So I was working at a restaurant for about 2.5 years. And obviously had a lot of customers, had a lot of clients that came in. And I had a very regular customer that came in and one time brought his wife. And his wife. His wife came in.
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. And then so
her story, not my story. I apologize.
And so his wife said, man, I really like, you know, your customer service. Would you be interested in, you know, a different industry? And so at the same time, I was applying for a bank job that he was also helping me achieve. And the bank job, the problem was it was only 20 hours. The apartment job was going to be 40 hours. So I went in, I interviewed. The hours were way better. I was working nights. I was working 6 in the afternoon to 5 in the morning.
You were running the tuckery, if I remember right.
Yes.
You were surrounded with a bunch of 30, 40-year-old women.
Yes.
And you were...
No one knew English. I was the
18,
only one that knew
17
English.
17 years old?
Yes, I was 17,
you
18.
You were working while you were in school?
Yes.
So and like you were running the store?
During the week, I would have to work from 4 in the afternoon to 1 in the morning. Then I would go home, go to sleep, and get up to go to school. 7 in the morning. So I did have co-op, but...
Work ethic.
Yeah, so I worked a lot. I worked 60-hour weeks. I was between 16 and 18. And so then once I interviewed, it was a leasing agent position in Casa Verde. So I was actually there only about 3 months. And then obviously I was young. I didn't know any different. And then you guys came in to purchase the community. And so obviously there was a scare that we were all going to lose our jobs. And I'm like, what? Like, I just started. It's only been 3 months. So thankfully, you guys didn't have a lot of staff, so you guys kept all of us.
We were very early in our development at that time. That was only our third property, I think.
You guys only had three.
And so it was our biggest property, 384
units. So there was actually 4 of us in the office. We had 2 leasing agents, the assistant, and the manager. And so you guys decided to keep the whole entire staff. So that's kind of how my journey started as to meet you guys, is because you guys purchased the property that I was working at.
You know, it is amazing. Again, I'm not sure how deep we're going to get. It's very hard for me not to get deep because there's so many good memories and stories. That happened exactly as she said. She left out the part about how she met her husband at the taqueria, but that's another story on how he wowed her at 2 o'clock in the morning after leaving the club. But we'll let Jose tell that story in another episode when we'll do a little reunion show. But yes, that's true. I mean, and that what you hear was work ethic, and that work ethic just spewed out when she was at Casa Verde. That was our biggest property. That was our third property. And it was heavy Class C, heavy Hispanic, lots of people without proper documentation. It was very new to us. But at the time, it was a good moneymaker. What happened, though, the recession hit and immigration got really tight. And I remember there was a couple of times where occupancy would go down. And we had to do a lot of creative marketing, a lot of like, you know, it was 30 in, 30 out. I mean, they were leasing a day. And if they didn't lease every day, you know, there was a problem going on, right? Because we needed 30 in, 30 out. But in Melissa, where Melissa got discovered there was that she just seemed to have so much poise and presence and control of the situation that, you know, she was a leasing agent. And I remember when I first met her, she was 18 years old. right? You're 18, you're 29 today, you're 18 years old. And she shined, you know, she shined.
So do you remember how I caught you all's attention without knowing that that's what I was doing?
No, I want to hear this. Maybe I do. Wait, should we say this on camera? I don't know. Is this a bad story?
So obviously.
I remember when I first saw you, and I pointed to Letty. I go, who's that? That's what I remember.
Yes, me. And then obviously there was another leasing agent.
Belia was there.
So that property. Yeah, it was Belia. Yeah. So same story. The issue that we were having there was because it was the classy clientele that was there and the property was a little older. And then we had just went through the hurricane. We had tons of work orders.
Oh, I was about to get to that.
Yes, tons of work orders. And so, obviously, there was lots of move-ins, move-outs. So, Belia would kind of help with the move-ins that were happening and the assistant manager. And so, I had to help with the work orders.
And just think about it, you had a 384-unit property.
Yes.
And the previous management wasn't very good. They just didn't focus on that. They didn't direct you guys to focus on that. And so, there were, how many work orders do you think at the prime?
So, I remember at one point, we had about 350 work orders.
Oh, that's not too bad. I was thinking it was like 1,000.
No, I don't think it ever got that high. I think 350 is what I can remember that we had. And so some of the work orders were very simple. But back then we had like, it was two sides to the property. So we would actually split the staff. Like we had a porter on each side. We had a ticket runner on each side and, you know, kind of a make ready on each side. And so the porters, though, weren't really helping with work orders. And I'm like, well, some of these work orders are simple work orders. You know, like they just need to go fill a hole in the baseboard or they need to, you know, change the AC filter. And so I started having the porters help. So I basically manned the whole project and got the work orders down to zero. And we were the largest community in the portfolio.
And what do you think happens when you get your work orders down to zero? Typically people renew. And as we've learned through those early lessons that you make all your money when people renew, not when they move in. Well, if you're taking care of them, they're gonna feel like, hey, this is okay. And, yeah. You know, it's very common, especially in the Spanish community, to take advantage of these residents, you know, and to not take care of the work orders and just assume that maybe because, you know, they have nowhere else to go or they think that they don't have options, that they're not going to leave. And they will leave. They will leave. But it takes a little while. You know, many of them are immigrants from other countries. So the conditions that to me are substandard are actually okay with them initially, right? But at some point they realize this isn't good enough. You know, I deserve better. And so when you get in our management company at the time, you know, to come in there and clean up and treat them like human beings, what do you know? Occupancy went up. And we were one of the only properties during that time to be able to do a refinance event. You know, I talk a lot about the 12 refinance events we did at Rockstar Capital. With this other company, I had three more, you know, and I think Melissa was a part of those two of the three. Now that I think about it, you know, and so there was a life before Rockstar, but Melissa was there. And I remember quickly, we're like, wow, she's too good here. We need to bring her to another property that we're struggling with. It was actually our second property, Vineyard Trace. And we needed to try to turn that property around. And so my partner and I at the time decided, hey, we're going to move her, make her the assistant manager. And, you know, she became the eyes and the ears. But more importantly, she took control. And it wasn't just like a fluke. It wasn't like something that she just did over here at Casa Verde and got lucky, you know, once in a blue moon kind of thing. She did it again at Vineyard Trace. And to turn that property around, people started renewing. We started to refinance. And, you know, we did our second refinance during the recession. And this is amazing, right? Because during the recession, you know, there are not jobs, right? Because everybody's pulled back in the market. And there's not jobs, there's not money. And they, people can't renew, or, you know, sorry, people can't move into your unit. So it's so hard. It's so important to take care of the people that are already there. And when Melissa took control of the work order activity, and then, of course, she leased every day. She was really, really good at that. You know, that property went up. And so flash forward just a little bit, I got a chance to purchase my very first property in 2010. And I remember my partner said, you know, who do you want to run it? And we had grown to a little bit of size at that point. I mean, by, you know, we started in 07. And so this is 2010. We probably had, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 properties at that time.
There was also a seniority.
Yes. And I was getting to that, right? So we had, I called it the bullpen. We had a lot of people that were in leasing positions. And then their next step to becoming a manager is assistant manager. And then there's a seniority thing. And typically the senior people are the ones in the assistant manager roles that are ready for the property manager roles. And I ran operations. I basically had Melissa's title today. I had it there at this other company. And I met with everybody weekly. We had big meetings. Was it on Mondays or Wednesdays? I don't remember anymore.
Wednesdays.
It was Wednesday mornings. You know, we would meet at 7 in the morning. And we would sit there for a good hour to 2 hours. Yes. And I would go through the numbers every single day with everybody. And I had with the assistants and the managers, right? We're all there?
Just the managers.
Just the manager, okay. And we would go through and we would share data. We would share everybody's information with everybody. I believe in that approach. I believe you should see what everybody else is doing. That way you can learn the lessons. That way you can also feel the competition. And with that, you know, Melissa shined. And so when it was time to buy my first property, Water Chase Apartments, we were going to close in 2010. I got a chance to pick. He goes, and my partner said, who do you want? Who do you want to run the property? I go, I want her. And it was no question that that's who I wanted. She was not the most senior person. She was 19 years old, 20 years old at the time. And I'm like, well, why do you want her? And he's like, well, because she's the one that doesn't fail. And I knew that if I give her a task, she wouldn't fail. I knew work order management, resident management is really part of it. I'll handle the sales aspect, leasing aspect. We'll handle the renovation. We'll get all that taken care of, you know. But I never understood how much of a leader she actually was. So when we started Water Chase, Melissa took over. We're at 80% occupied, 78%. 77% occupied. And we all came up with a strategy that we needed to. They had, 20 units ready to go.
They were ready.
They were. They so this other ready. Company had this. This was a recession, right? 2010. They had 20 units ready to go, but they were not getting leased. They had a senior person sitting in there who had probably had 20, 30 years of property management experience, but she had old school property management experience. And it's during the recession. She didn't understand. She just kept having the guys, Frank and Henry, get the units ready, but had all this inventory, nowhere to go. And so we came up with the idea that we're going to drop pricing temporarily. It was a pretty good cut, like $100 or so. It was about $100. And man, Melissa leased them up right away. I think after 30 days, we're at 90%. Mm-hmm. After 60 days, we were at 98 to 100%. And that property stayed like that for a long time. And that's where our relationship formed, was there. So then when it was time for me to start Rockstar Capital, it was a very difficult time, right? Because I'm leaving my business partner. I'm leaving all the 2,000 units that I run and all the relationships and all that. But I was keeping my one property that I had, Water Chase Apartments. And I thought it was understood that my team that was there would come with me. Well, my partner had other plans, and he tried to circumvent that and try to go around my back and send emissaries on his behalf to go talk to Melissa and the team, and telling them that I was gonna fail, and that I couldn't do it, I wouldn't be able to make payroll, and don't go over there because he can't do this alone without his partner. What happened?
Just the opposite.
What happened for you though? What happened? You went home.
So obviously it was scary for me to first understand. So Robert did come and talk to me, and obviously, you know, it was a shock to me because I didn't know
this was coming. You were 19 years old.
Yes, I didn't even know this was coming. I had been married a year. And so when Robert tells me, obviously Robert was the one I dealt with on a day-to-day basis. And so obviously I went home, I talked to my husband, and so we kind of, obviously I was scared. And then obviously people were scaring me too. But then I'm like, no, I have to trust my gut. And this is who I work with every day. This is who's here. This is who helps the community. So obviously this is who I'm going to stay with.
And that's what happened.
And that's what happened.
And next thing you know, the year after, she wins Property Manager of the Year for Houston Apartment Association. That was Rockstar's first HAA's, you know, win. She was the youngest ever win at the young age of 20 years old. And she basically became what we built Rockstar Capital around. Every deal for the next 9 deals, she was the front man. She was the acquisition person. She became the very first manager and created order out of chaos in every single deal. Because we bought chaos. That's where the value is at. You buy chaos. And Melissa went there and created order from the chaos, led the teams, and basically grew with me. You know, I met her a long time ago as a different man and a younger man. And to know that she was there at that time and watching as we grow, you know, she's become, you know, my right arm without any question. And we've built this company together, and it's been a lot of fun, you know. And I think, you know, and many of my peers try to emulate and copy that. Like, where'd you find Melissa? How'd you get that? Did you get lucky? It's like, no, man, I didn't get lucky. I identify talent, and then you build around it. You give it, you water it, you take care of it. You find out, you know, what they need to make them happier in life. And because you have an ability or resources to do it, you try to help them. You know, and what do you know? And in return, you get their work ethic, you get their heart, they get committed to you, you know, because and that's where I learned, you know. I give my dad a lot of credit for that because I didn't realize until being put in that role that's where that came from. You know, my dad worked at Whataburger for 40 plus years and he built teams. And I didn't understand, I would hear these conversations on the phone. We would go through drive-thrus and I'd order food and him and them taking notes and all these, you know, or phone calls he would have. And all that time I was hearing it and just kind of absorbing it. And as an older man now, I recognize, wow, now I know where that gift came from. That gift came from him, that ability. And I credit that with being able to find Melissa and build this company around her. And today we're got $348 million. Would you ever think that we'd be at this point?
No, from starting to working side by side every day.
Yeah, you know, and it was amazing, right? So I just want to go back and tell the Jerry Maguire moment, right? So when Melissa came, you know, they told her I wasn't gonna do it, and she had to have a moment and figure out what I want to do. It was a crossroads. Mm-hmm. She was a very young age; she was 19, and she's got to have a crossroads on what she's gonna do. And I always said it was like that Jerry Maguire moment, right? You see that where he leaves the firm and he's gonna start out, and nobody wants to come with him. You know, Does anybody want to come? And nobody wants to raise their hand. And then at the last second, you know, I can't remember her name, Renee something or other, goes and raises her hand. So I'll come with you, because she remembers Jerry and she thought she liked his spunk and his enthusiasm. He's like, yeah, she's coming with me. I don't remember her name, but she's coming with me. And he goes, and so is the fishbowl. The fishbowl's coming with me. So that was kind of like our Jerry Maguire fishbowl moment. And it's been an amazing ride. We've grown so much, you know. And we could probably have a business meeting here for everybody and just kind of, you know, because we live and breathe this stuff. And I don't know how long we should make this podcast go. I know it could go for 4 hours if we did that, though. So, Melissa, so let's talk a little about some of the transitions. You know, I have a lot of peers that are watching this show, and they're starting to grow out of their mom and pop, right? What are some of the mom and pop lessons that you remember how we used to do things and how today, whoa, we got lucky, or we could do it that way, but we do it a different way today?
Well, definitely the number one thing is us having to touch everything. That was the hardest for me, is having to let go and having to actually grow out of, you know, doing a mom and pop, meaning we were going to handle everything. We were involved in every single decision. It started off with obviously both of us being there, and then you had to kind of step away when we started getting more and more deals. And so I tried to be involved, but obviously I hit a cap where it's like, okay, now we need to bring in some regionals. Mm-hmm. Let's bring in some help. Let's bring in someone else to bring in their ideas and actually help
with
the process. So our first ones weren't as successful.
Why do you think they weren't successful?
This is
in 2016. We finally decided we need help.
I believe the biggest difference is, like everyone says, Rockstar does it different, and it's true. Why? Because the CEO is involved. I am involved. We're not people that are going to work from home and you know, show up once every 6 months. We're actually involved, and we're going to ask the simplest questions. Why did this unit move out? You know, why did we cancel this move-in? You know, were there questions that maybe the CEO isn't normally going to ask? We are going to ask it because we're paying attention to everything. And so I feel like that was the biggest difference, is they're not used to actually being on site every day, which is what we expected because we're there every day. And I feel like that was the biggest disconnect that we had.
And I also think too that, okay, and so what do you think has been the success? So what was our plan after that? What did we learn? Well, we learned that we do things a little differently. Correct. And they come in with a different mindset, different experience, and it doesn't match us. And there's a little bit of bucking the system instead of maybe trusting us and understand, well, these guys have a level of success. Maybe we should give into them a little bit and see if their way works before I try to assert my way. We realized that didn't work, right? So what was our solution to that?
It was to grow within.
Yeah.
So obviously, in the 9 deals that I actually set, my whole job was to take over the community, stabilize it, but also train the manager that was going to stay behind me, because I needed to be ready to go to the next site. And so from that, I have obviously built successful managers that were ready for the next step and ready for more responsibilities. And those are our regionals now to this day.
Yeah, I think what happens is that you have to build the bench. I think that when you're growing a company, you have to have a little bit of vision and foresight and realize that you cannot be everywhere all the time, you know, and you have to be ready to build that bench. And then you got to be ready to let it go, to let your horses run and see what they can do. I think there was a lift on my side. There was a lot of insecurity with thinking that my team was ready to take that next plunge, that it was easier for me to go. And I mean, we hired a manager who ran the Class A property of the year, thinking that because she won that award that she could translate into become a regional. We hired another man who had been the property manager of the year, but at the largest property to ever win that award, like 700 units or something like that. Like, wow, he can you know, network, he can run teams, he'd be a good person here. But that didn't work out like that. And as Melissa said, you know, we have the Rockstar way. But what it did is it bought us time. It bought us time to realize, hey, this isn't working out. We've got to get our young talent, because we're a very young company. Most people in our in our company that are in a positions of leadership responsibility grew within the company and are in early, they're in their mid to late 20s, they're in their 30s, but they started their career with Rockstar. And so I think those are some of the biggest lessons now. So today, and so that was in what, 2017 when we realized that.
Yes.
So our process, our way to fixing it was what, with the area managers?
Yes. So we started off with, before we gave them the regional position, we started them off as area managers. So I gave them a responsibility of 2 to 4 communities. And then gave them about 6 months, had them show that they can handle the pressure and handle the communities. And then we promoted most of them to regionals.
That's exactly right. I think it's worked out well. You know, I think, you know, when you have 12 refinance events, that means a lot of good stuff happened. But it happened because the manager in the chair was paying attention and she did it, or he did it, your way. They did it with the way that they were trained, that they were shown, and they didn't deviate from it. They didn't question it. Those refinance events happen from people that we grew within the company, literally planted them as a leasing agent, watered them, fertilized them, you know, loved them, gave them sunshine. Next thing you know, they became a quality property manager and had success. Doesn't it make sense that those should be the ones that would be your regionals, to be your leaders of tomorrow? We just needed some of that maturation time to go through. And so I think that's what happened with the early, that early 2016 field of supervisors or regionals that we hired. It gave us time for our area managers to grow and to get a little more experience. And it's been amazing. What do you think another mom and pop?
So obviously, the other mom and pop I'm thinking about is obviously marketing, right? That's been a big thing that
we could spend 3 hours just on this.
I mean, it's so true. So obviously back then it was, you know, we would take turns on handing out flyers. Okay, it's your turn to go today to this shopping center. Go print out, you know, 4 flyers per page so it can be cheaper. Let's use color paper instead of using, you know, color ink. And let's cut them in 4, go pass them out. And at the same time, when one person's marketing, going out there marketing, you have another person standing with a big 4 rent arrow or free rent arrow, spinning it in the middle of the road. And we had shifts. I mean, my maintenance guys knew, okay, from 1 to 2, you're going to be out there. My leasing agent will be out there from 2 to 3. I will be out there from this time to this time. Like, we had our schedule of our marketing. And that's how we brought people through the door. I mean, it was, we relied 100% on drive-by. We did not have websites up until, what, 2018,
2017? I mean, 20, well, with Midtown Grove.
It would have been when Midtown Grove, so that was 2015.
2015.
Yes. So
we but it wasn't really websites. A website. It wasn't not a real website.
No. So then we decided, like, okay, it's time. Let's go ahead and get a website at least so people can apply online. And so we kind of went with the basic basic.
The other issue with mom and pop is that you don't want to let go of your belief. You know, especially when we had a certain level of success and it worked in the past. Why doesn't it work now?
Mm-hmm.
We were, mom and pops don't evolve. They stay in the past and that works for them, right? Because it'll work. It worked in the past. It'll work in today's time. But what happens is that the old world will eat up the new world eventually. And you'll start to see a deterioration of your ideas. You'll start to see, wait, but this always worked. I don't understand why it's not working anymore. It's because the old world is going to eat up the new world. And we had some of that. You know, I mean, part of what Melissa was saying was, you know, with the spinners, you know, having, we'd have our maintenance guys out there take turns, you know. You know, so we would have to pay an outside company.
Because it was too expensive.
It was too expensive. But then we take our expensive maintenance guys and take them out when they should be getting units ready. We have them out there spinning.
We would even buy them like a big head, like a Dora head or a SpongeBob head so they can catch attention.
We would advertise in Spanish periodicals like La Subasta and what's another one?
In the Green Sheet.
In the Green Sheet.
Use the Green Sheet for a while.
But the problem is those are low-level periodicals. Yes. Those are low-level marketing thing. And what are you going to get with low-level marketing is low-level clients. People that can't afford to pay your rent. They're on minimum wage or, you know.
That are looking for the special you're advertising because obviously we would put their free rent or 99 move-in or 199.
That's a great point. The deeper the discount, the more you increase the chance of that person skipping on you within 6 months for sure. Many times, 90 days. They'd be special hoppers, you know, because they don't maybe have a proper identification or whatever.
Correct.
Then they were like, well, you can't find me. You can't, you know, pursue me. You can't, you know, send any kind of collection at me. And so we learn, right? But the hard part is having to give up the old ideas and evolving. I think that's an amazing piece. And again, you could probably spend 3 hours on that. But I do want to spend a minute on this, on marketing. So I know how I see marketing, how I saw marketing evolve in our company. How did you see it? How did you see it evolve? What shook us out of that?
So I think the biggest thing was obviously, it was a big learning curve for me because it was hard for me to let go and say no, but it used to work. Like, why do I need to spend more money here? Why do I need to advertise on these ILSs where before I didn't have to and my properties were full? And so the biggest thing was obviously seeing the website hits, learning about SEO, learning about Google AdWords. Just it's a totally different ballgame. And so learning all of that and seeing how, yes, our rents are starting to increase even more. We're seeing the increase. We're seeing that increase in stable occupancy, the constant leads coming in and actually seeing it. Because before, obviously, we can't measure the results. We didn't see them. So I guess that's how I see where it's a benefit of having those reports and actually being able to go back and look at them.
And then you have a cost associated with it, though, right? So you have to offset the cost. Yes. And that's the big piece, too, because mom and pop think all about cost. You know, cheaper is better. And cheaper is not better. Cheaper is cheaper. And you have to understand, I mean, are you going to go, we just, on the last podcast, we had somebody who's getting breast cancer treatment. She could have gone anywhere. She went to MD Anderson. MD Anderson is not cheap. MD Anderson is expensive, but that's because they can. They're the best care in the world for cancer research and cancer treatment. And so why do you, do you want the cheapest guy or do you want the guy that's got the experience? I have a little different spin on what you just said. I think for me, the evolution came was Midtown Grove. We bought that property in 2015 with the idea that we would be the low-cost Class A provider. We dipped our toe into the Class A market with only 51 units because I was scared. But I thought with only 51 units, I can control it. Just like I can control my other properties. You know, I didn't get too big. It was small enough. I could put a junior leasing agent in there and cut all I had to do was just lease and cut payroll costs. Mm-hmm. And then the recession hit. That there was a second recession, I guess it was in Houston. And jobs lost. And at the same time, you had 50,000 apartment communities or apartment units coming online.
Yes,
and we literally walked into a gunfight with a knife. We were just learning websites. We were forced to learn. And when you're forced to learn, necessity is the mother of invention. When you're hurting, you'll figure it out. If you care enough, you'll figure it out. And I think without that event, we wouldn't be where we're at today. We learned reputation management. We learned a lot about websites. I also learned how vulnerable we were. You know, and with that, I don't like feeling vulnerability. I thought we were rock star and that we had all the answers and we were evolving and we can figure this out. That was a big lesson. It certainly was not the biggest money maker that we've ever had at Rockstar. And in fact, something we just learned in the last month probably could have made that a big money maker with some of the new marketing techniques we're using. But I didn't have that at the time. But we got to there because we evolved. And had we not had that property, we wouldn't have evolved. That property created what Rockstar is today with all the reputation management and the SEOs, the Facebook advertising. We started, that was the infancy of our social media campaigns. But it was also a catalyst for me personally that I wanted to go and understand this better. You know, I was willing to invest my time, my money, my resources into people who had this ability. And that was when I first discovered Grant Cardone and I discovered Gary Vaynerchuk. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go meet these guys. I'm going to go and sit in their educational events and see what I can learn. And we learned video storytelling. Right now, if I had not gone in 2016 to meet Gary, we would not later, it was 2017 actually, that we met Gary, that I would not have formed the video team. The first marketing, it was Joey Hunt, right? Yes. He's now a student at UT Austin. He was a senior at Humble High School. He was our very first videographer. And, you know, it was about storytelling, how to use video and storytelling. We weren't doing podcasts yet. We weren't doing the apartment rock star branding.
We didn't have amenity videos and properties.
We didn't have anything, but that's what he was hired to do, right? Yes. Was to shoot these amenity videos. And then later on, he was still on the team and we wound up going to see Grant Cardone and filming that. And we learned a lot more about branding. But along the way, I met a lady who was friends, who had worked at a larger 10,000 unit management company based out of the Midwest, who really showed me that I didn't understand marketing. I didn't understand lead management. I didn't understand how these other big companies were doing it. And I felt like, wow, we were in the dark ages. And I'm like, how do I do this? And so she introduced us to a couple of people that wound up becoming the beginning of our marketing company. Tracy Tyler, you saw her last week. She's our VP of marketing and innovation. And adding that higher end marketing person to come in and help us has been a major difference for us. It's pushed us to new levels, new highs. But then together, you know, I realized that what she had was a lot of the old school marketing as well, was the SEO. And that's old school, right? I mean, it works and it's very important, the iOS management. But today, you got to be understand how to use the camera and how to get on Instagram. You got to use that camera and how to get on Facebook and how to push your products that way. And because at the end of the day, we're trying to replace the iOS's that charges a tremendous amount of money. Today, we spend less on iOS's than we ever did before, you know, because we're putting most of our ads towards social media, Facebook, Instagram, what have you, and we're getting a big benefit from it. Tell us a little more about that transition for you, right? Because I didn't show you that, right? I mean, these are the mom and pop issues, right? I showed you the outside market. I showed you that curb appeal is everything, color, flags, drive-by traffic, right? And here comes tracing and how we learned SEOs and how to generate leads from websites that we didn't have before, right? How has that transition been for you?
Obviously a game changer for me. More than anything is when we learned, like you're saying, social media.
But it challenged what you thought, though, right?
Of course. And so,
and there's a cost associated with it.
Yes. And so that's obviously the scary part at first, is you're like, I have to spend how much? But then when you see the benefit of, you know, obviously Facebook was a big trial and error for us. And we were, oh, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Are we doing it right? Are we not? And we had to spend a lot of resources.
What did you learn from that?
Funds from that Facebook is important.
But what have you learned, though? Does it work?
Of course. It's become
one of our... But why do you believe that today and you didn't believe it before in the beginning? That's what I want everybody to hear.
Because I wasn't big on Facebook. I wasn't big on social media at all because I didn't have time.
She's the one millennial that didn't have a social media account.
Yes,
she's like, I'm too busy. I'm too busy. I got a company to run and I got babies at home. Yes. I don't have time to play around on Facebook.
I was ready to put my kids to bed and finish working. So I never had time for that. But obviously once Facebook started hitting, we started learning about it. So I opened up my Facebook account. And you see how tons of businesses are on there, tons of ads, and how smart they are, where you can have a conversation about buying a new car and you're going to see that ad pop up about a new car because they're hearing what you're saying. And so that's how, to us, it became very important that we need to be on there, and people are always on their phones, and it's true. They can run into you because they're on their phone and they're not paying attention, and you know they're walking in the mall or in the store or whatever. Everyone has their phone in their hand.
They take their phone to the bathroom.
Yes. That's the number one place everyone's at. And you can tell when someone's in the restroom, they answer the phone. But yeah, I mean, everyone's on their phone at all times. And so that's how it became that's very important. Where before, I guess phones weren't that big. When their flip phones were there and, you know, it wasn't as big of a deal as to now. It's, yes, you have to be on social media.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, right? Because as the head of operations, you have to be open-minded. And you have to understand, like, hey, wait, this works for us, but let me see. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I'm that always questions everything.
Yes, and that's okay, right? Because you got to have that doubter. You got to have because you have to justify it. Sell me on it. And I'm the innovator. I'm the guy. I'm the early adopter. I want it right now. I want it right now. Let's try it. Try it. You know, like the new strategy we have right now. I mean, yes. I was like, let's do it. And but it wasn't working. And like, we're about to give up on it. And like, no, don't give up on this yet. I took this course. I took this presentation. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, let me talk to Tark about it, right? Because, he knows somebody on this. And next thing you know, whoa, okay, this does work. Literally, talking to him changed the strategy from one day to the next. And now I think it's going to be a major business model for us. What is it? I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you because we're still perfecting it. You'll find out about it in a year or two once I get really good at it. and then you guys can catch up on it, right? But we're going to figure it out for ourselves right now. And then we'll see you at the finish line. That's the fun part about, for me and Rockstar Capital, is that, you know, we think we're on this level right here, but man, we're really trying to get to this level and we don't even know it. And as we talk and talk and talk about...
Someone throws us a curveball and we're like, oh,
yeah, what? But then we get better.
Of course.
Right? It's the lessons they that make you better.
Idea. Yes.
You know, and like we got a property down in Cove, right? Down there in Ingleside, which I remember, let's talk about that. There's this property down in Ingleside, which... You know, it is a 2017 built property. It's not the conventional type property. It's got a lot of short-term leases and it's got a lot of corporate housing, which we were not familiar with. And in fact, we had a negative experience with it from Midtown Grove.
Yes.
And I remember having this call and we're having tears, right? We're on there like, don't buy this deal. I'm scared. Don't do this deal. And of course, we had Sam that was like, no, this is good. There's some opportunities. There's some big, and I'm left in the middle. Like, what are we going to do here? And I'm thinking, all right. Make sure we raise enough cash because we're going to do this. And I made that decision because I'm like, you know, we're going to get better from this. I don't know how we're going to figure it out, but we always figure it out. I'm going to do this. We're going to jump into this. We're going to run through the ring of fire. Mm-hmm. Even though we've never done that before, but we're going to learn. And right now, we got some amazing opportunities right now that might make that an amazing turnaround project next year. And it just took a little bit of faith, a little bit of a leap of faith, blind faith, that we're going to figure it out. And I think when you surround yourself with enough talent, and we have more talent now today at Rockstar than ever before, we're getting ready to add even more talent. We're evolving. We're about to start, you know, a massive capital raise, and that's exciting for us. We're going to grow this company. But for me, that's the fun part, you know? I mean, I'd love to hear from your side, you know, how have you seen this evolve from where we're at to kind of what we're doing today? I mean,
It's night and day where we started to just learning. I mean, we're constantly evolving, constantly learning new projects. And obviously, it's fun. It keeps us busy. It keeps us, you know, competitive with the market. It's new and fun things that you work on each and every day.
Now, I love sending you a text like at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. I go, she's probably busy, but I want, hey, I just found this out. Did you know about this? You know, and it's fun. I look forward because I know you'll respond to me. And we keep the business going. You know, I really believe that I've got a life that I don't need a vacation from. You know, I really enjoy this. And when I do want a vacation, I want to take my work colleagues. I want to take my friends with me, you know. And
we talk more work.
So we just got back from Vegas and had a really good time, you know. Yeah. And so that was a lot of fun. And we talked work there. You know, it's just another.
Inevitable.
It is inevitable. But I want to go back. I want to ask the question again, but maybe in a different way. What do you think is the credit to our success so far? Why do you think we have 3,800 units today? Why do you think we've won, you know, 17 city, state, national awards? Everybody hears me talk about it, right? But you've been in the middle of it all. Why do you think that's occurred?
I think the number one thing is communication, that we have great communication. One, that you're involved and we make quick decisions. And so we can move quickly and implement plans that we have much quicker than having to wait. And I mean, that's what I think. Just the communication is number one, is that we are involved and we're here. And it's not like we have just started a company and we kind of step away and leave it in the hands of a leasing agent or a manager. We're actually involved and we know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think that has helped us, but also being open to change and knowing that new changes are going to come and keeping up with the market itself.
Well, you and I cannot be everywhere. No matter how much I want that to be, it cannot be. There are 22 properties right now all across the state. I can't believe I can say that now. We're across the state, right? We're down in South Texas. We're down in Alvin and Brazoria County. We're not no longer in just Humble or Harris County. You know, what do you think? Why are we successful even in those places though? What's separating us right now?
It's still communication is the same thing, because I have my weekly meetings with regionals. I stay in constant communication with them. We have enough people in place, and I feel like we know if we see that we have a weakness, okay, let's hire our weakness. Mm-hmm. So what is it that I need help with? Okay, let's hire that and, you know, have them report back and have them communicate, but have them, that's their core focus. And we're not scared to hire someone just to handle one task, because as we know, that's not the only thing they're going to work on. Eventually, they're going to have a million and two things to do.
I think communication is a big piece of it. I think a lot of times, though, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we have the most talented people, because I don't think that's true. I think there's a lot of people that are very skilled. I think there's a lot of great staff out there with a lot of different companies with tons of experience and with good work ethic. I think what separates us, though, is that we're not going to quit. I think we have so much heart here in this company that it just trickles down from the top to the next mid-level to the lower level. You know, I think people expect to win because there's an expectation of winning. We win at this company. We talk about it. There's a reason why I say all the awards that we won. There's a reason why I talk about the refinance events, because nobody else has them. No one else has made them important. You know, we're not competing with them. We're competing with ourselves. But more importantly, we care about each other. And I think that heart comes out. It trickles out. It just actually gushes out. You know, when I know Melissa from 18 years old. I remember her financial situation. I remember where she was at, where she was raised. And I look at where she's at today. That happened because somebody decided to invest in her a long time ago. And then she invested back. And that's why we have what we have today. That's why we have the 3,800 units. I mean, Rockstar is her baby. I think she's told me that a couple of times. It's like another child. She's got three beautiful boys. But there's a fourth child. And his name is Rockstar Capital. You know, and he's really important. And she looks after him with her life. You know, and I that doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen. But that kind of attitude, that kind of heart trickles down to the rest of the company, and everybody else wants to fight. Everybody else wants to give in. You know, Tracy was just here a minute ago. You know, I understand Tracy really, really well. And I think this is a magical opportunity for her as well, right? And I know she's better for it for being part of this company, right? But because I've invested in her and she's invested back, and that's what I try to do. I try to give everybody the 51% of the relationship, right? So that they feel, you know, I don't like using the word employees. I hate that word. You know, it's just not a word that I enjoy. To me, it's like using a racial term. I won't use it. I don't like it. It's a staff. They're part of your staff. It's a colleague. It's a work relationship. It's someone, you know, because they can come and go. I mean, you know, but I don't want them to leave. And just like I believe that all the money's made on the renewal, well, the money you make in your company is based on the consistency of your employment. And the lower that turnover is, just like in our properties, when we have a property that's 29% turnover versus a property that's a 60% turnover, there's a difference in financial performance. Well, there's a difference in Rockstar if the staff turnover is so low. I like that the industry knows that we show up to events all together. I like that they see us, you know, with a major camaraderie. I think others have tried to emulate that. But I'll tell you this. You can imitate it, but you can never duplicate it, because it comes from the heart and it comes from the soul. And Melissa is the natural. Melissa is the epitome of that. There isn't a harder working person in this company, to me, that puts more time, more effort, and has given up so much of her time than Melissa and Jose, her husband, who manages our maintenance side as well. You know, but I really wanted to share this opportunity with everybody, because I don't think everybody gets to see, you know, the person. For so long at my other company, I was the person behind the curtain, you know, making all the work, and, like, you know, just like Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the guy with all the knobs, you know, and I never want Melissa to feel like that. I don't want her to be someone that's behind the curtain. She's the COO of this company for a reason. She's an equity partner in this company for a reason. You know, and she's benefiting this, right? I mean, not only, you know, she's an owner in every property going back to 2016, right? So you've got quite the real estate portfolio, including your own rent houses, and you know, that's all the result of this company, of being part of this company, and the relationships, the friendships, and investing in it, and how the company invests back. You know, and I used to have an expression that I don't use as much anymore, but I need to get back to it. It's like, you know, if you take care and water the Rockstar tree, she'll bear fruit for you. She will. She'll take care of you and your family. And so I'm excited to have Melissa part of my family and part of Rockstar Capital. I hope you enjoyed seeing a glimpse of the inside and the inner workings of Rockstar Capital and some of our origin story and how we got started. Melissa, do you have any final comments you want to add?
No, I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed our episode.
Yeah, this is, for me, very heartfelt, very special. It's the origin. It's the beginning, the nucleus of Rockstar Capital. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Let me know. Send me some feedback. I'd love to hear it. We'll catch you next time on the Apartment Rockstar Podcast.
You've been listening to the Apartment Rockstar Podcast with Robert Martinez. For more content, follow Robert on Instagram at Robert_theapartmentrockstar and subscribe to our YouTube channel. This has been a production of Rockstar Capital. Thank you for listening.